Hi, I'm Grant Walt, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's guest is the great John Strong of Fox Sports. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. Onward! As promised, we've got John Strong here on the line. John, thanks for coming back on the show, my friend.
You know what? We will always have a lovely breakfast together, if nothing else, at the Intercontinental Hotel by the Fox lot. So it's all good, Grant. How are you today? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing great. I appreciate you coming back on. I will give the listener a very short version of the long, long story here that we actually recorded this one other time a couple weeks ago together in L.A. At the hotel right by Fox, where we were having this big pre-World Cup and Gold Cup meeting. And screw-ups of the amateur variety don't just happen to people in their 20s. They happen to people like me. And the audio got screwed up. And here we are again, re-recording an interview that has already taken place but is lost to the mists.
It's funny because I was explaining this to my wife that we had to do it again. And I said, I think, you know, the audio file got corrupted or some sort of issue. And she's like, well, how does an audio file get corrupted? I said, well, you know how it is. Young audio files, they're sort of insecure. They're searching for social connection. They start hanging out with the bigger, older audio files in the playground. And then they're smoking cigarettes and getting tattoos and saying swear words. This happens. It's okay. And then she just sort of gave me that look of like, why are you the way you are? So, yeah.
But I want to go from that into something that's actually sort of philosophical and heavy here.
Ooh, I like it.
It doesn't necessarily have to be, but you had an amazing 2018. You were Fox's lead play-by-play announcer at the World Cup. You called a ton of World Cup games with Stu Holden, including the World Cup final. You're in your early 30s, which is crazy for what you've achieved already. But what do you do when you achieve your life career goal in your early 30s?
I have, without being too over the top and without being too hashtag first world problems about it, I've absolutely spent a lot of time in my own head since, and I always sort of do in the winter anyway, because I don't have games to call, and so my mind drifts to things. And yeah, it's an interesting concept of exactly that, when you have achieved so much of what you would set out your whole life to achieve so quickly. I've had things come at me so quickly. I've been the beneficiary of, you know, dozens and dozens of lucky breaks, being in the right place at the right time, and we felt very proud. I say we because it has been a collective group effort, all of us. We felt very, very, very proud about not just what we accomplished in Russia last year, but our work on the Champions League last spring, through the stretch run of MLS into MLS Cup. And it was a wonderful, wonderful year. So what do you do next? And one of the ways I sort of thought about it in my head, and this has become kind of my stump speech now when I speak to students or things like that or aspiring broadcasters, is at the end of the day, what is the inherent difference between the Macarena and Brown Eyed Girl? Because the Macarena becomes this massive hit, goes around the world and back. But now, if you ever hear it, which you don't, it's probably at a wedding or something where it's sort of being done quasi-ironically, whereas Brown Eyed Girl, which at the time was sort of a throwaway song by Van Morrison, wasn't necessarily targeted to be this big, massive hit. And I defy you to find someone who can't immediately recognize that song and sing along and bob their heads to parts of it. And it's decades and decades old. So that's my thought process. Like, how do I, rather than just be a one-hit wonder, a flash in the pan, someone who, wow, remember that dude who called a World Cup when he was 33? Whatever happened to him? How do I build a career now? And how do I build a body of work that, you know, stands out? And we talk about that a lot. And Stu and I, when we were in L.A., had a great sit-down with David Neal, our boss on the World Cup. We watched back the final, and we talked about, as we have with others, what is it that Joe Buck and Troy Aikman do so well, that they are the unquestioned A crew? How do we achieve that level? How do we keep pointing in the right direction? How do we make sure at the end of the day we're in those chairs in 2026? Because whatever life goal achievement Russia was, a home World Cup in 2026, that'll be the biggest soccer broadcast event of any of our lifetimes, probably. So how do we get there? And how do we make sure that, in my case, this army of sort of young punks coming out of colleges now and our aspiring broadcasters that are getting opportunities in soccer, that are very talented and are getting opportunities even sooner than I did, how do I make sure they don't chase me down before that happens? And I sort of just keep my nose out in front. So we think about that a lot. Luckily, I'm in an environment of, and this is sort of a culture set by Shaw Brown, our producer, every single week. What can we be doing better? What can we be better at? What was wrong? Was fixable? How do we really think on a detail level about the work that we do and not just show up, talk into a microphone for 2 hours and go home? I think that environment is crucial now to make sure that rather than sit back and think, well, I called a World Cup at 33. I'm the best there is. No. There's a lot more for me to reach.
When you look back on that Russia World Cup, and maybe it's a blur to you, I don't know, but I was over there. Obviously, I worked for Fox as well, and I saw the amount of travel, the degree of difficulty for what you were doing, that stuff that not you know, viewers didn't see necessarily, of like overnight flights all over that country on
Russian
airlines.
They did if they
were
following Stu's Instagram, which, as we joke, was our passive aggressive way of pointing out to our bosses, you know, what they had done to us. But yes, continue. Sorry.
But what stands out to you now, looking back at this really huge experience and accomplishment?
Because that's the other side of it, right? As much as, okay, move past it, move on, get better, don't let it go. Don't forget this incredible time, these incredible memories, because you never know if it's going to happen again. And so that's something you can always look back on as a special time in your life. And I, among other things, I'm looking in my office to my left here. I basically, during the national anthem of the final, took a big panoramic photo on my phone of sort of just, you know, because we were, I think, five rows from the top of the Luzhniki Stadium. And so this great vista of this incredible moment, and I had it, you know, a big giant canvas print made, and it's going to be, as we redo my office, hanging up as a reminder of that. And it's funny because just over the weekend, so we did the game in Minneapolis, my brother-in-law, my wife's brother, married into a big Minnesota family, and so I was hanging out with them until I flew home. And it was, so my sister-in-law's parents, who, you know, and I, the wonderful people, and Lisa, Tom and Lisa, and Lisa goes, you know, I don't watch any of the soccer. So I apologize for not knowing. And it does sort of preface all their questions, but they're asking me, because I hadn't seen them since, about Russia. And it was fun to relive it. And I think more so than the games, it was the experiences. It was being with a group of friends. Stu Holden, I've become very good friends with. Shaw Brown, I've been working with since 2012. My friend since middle school, Eric, who now we just confirmed it actually in the budgets and all that, for a fifth consecutive summer will be with me, sitting to my left for every game at the Gold Cup this year as sort of a stats and research assistant.
Nice.
And it was a special group and special times that we had doing ridiculous things and spending 24 total hours laying over in Moscow's third best airport, and the all these different things we got to see and do and experience. Three times calling games where I hadn't actually really slept the night before. Things like that. It's special. It's amazing. And the fact that we got better as we went along, the fact that we, I think, finished at our best was really cool. But I will always be someone that, for me, it's the time spent outside and around the game with my coworkers, with my friends, those experiences, seeing the world, being in parts of Russia, even other Russians couldn't go to a couple of decades ago. That stuff stands out to me more than, you know, the Ronaldo's hat trick against Spain in our opening match, getting to call Messi's games in person, Germany getting knocked out, the incredible Russia-Croatia. Those things are great, but it's the other stuff that will always stand out to me.
Now, as I said, I'm not unbiased here. I think when you look at that degree of difficulty that you had in Russia and the performance that you had despite that degree of difficulty, I don't know if you pay a lot of attention to Sports Emmy Awards, but I was happy that Fox got nominated for its overall production, but I was really disappointed that you were not nominated individually for a Sports Emmy.
And this is one of those things where we sort of have to reenact the way this went down when we did it live the first time. No, I will admit absolutely to being swept up a little bit in that idea, because, you know, the people in charge of such things at Fox, what you do is you put together a reel, and it's, I don't know, like 10 to 15 minutes long, and you sort of submit that to the committee and all this stuff. And, you know, I think they felt very good about the work that I had done and the way that they had presented it. But I also, you know, I need to be realistic of, this is my first time just scratching at the surface, really, of big time sports broadcasting. And the guys that were nominated, the guys like Jim Nance and Doc Emmerich and Ian Eagle, I love that he was in there because I'm a big fan of his. You know, Joe Buck, I mentioned earlier, these are guys that have been doing it at that level for a very long time. So as much as it, again, it's sort of like, is it a little blip or is it the beginning of something that I can really build on and be doing it for a long time and get to a level where, not just for my own sake, but for soccer's sake as well, in those types of circles, is soccer being seen as a major sport, a venue for top level sports broadcasting, or is it still being seen as this sort of separate and other thing, sort of a fringe thing onto the side? The fact that Alexi got nominated individually last year was an interesting part of that as well. But I think that's the challenge now for all of us, is how do we make sure the work that we're doing is being seen and perceived, not just from a quality standpoint, but from a relevant standpoint, alongside the quality work being done in, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, the other, again, in sort of air quotes, I roll my eyes, what has been kept is the traditional mainstream sports over a period of time. When does soccer click all the way over? Right. And this is one of those interesting measurements of that. But yeah, it's also, as I've heard from many of my mentors, if you're focusing too much on individual attention, on individual accolades, on likes, on retweets, it's part of why I've kept social media at arm's length. That's a very slippery slope to end up basically doing this for the wrong reasons or having the wrong goals and aims, as opposed to, like I said, can we just produce quality work and have a good time and hopefully the viewers enjoy it?
Now, this is another topic I'm going to ask you about that may get into philosophical stuff, may not, but is also the bedrock of your job is your voice. I'm sort of fascinated by the topic of voice. Maybe it's because I used to just be a writer, and the last couple years I've started doing episodic podcast series narration and video and hosting my own video show, all that stuff going on TV. But for different platforms, I'm learning that like bosses, producers want me to have a different voice when I do a Fox video essay on TV compared to when I narrate a Sports Illustrated podcast series. And your voice is such a part of you. How do you modulate your voice? How much of your voice is you? How much did that voice develop over time?
Make it sound like I'm Darth Vader or something like that. How much of your voice is actually you, and how much is an auto-tune you had surgically grafted in? And I will say this, I'm hyper aware of that sort of thing because I came up through radio. I sort of grew into television, but I was in radio for a very long time where obviously your voice is everything. And I'm of the belief, there are lots of different parts to television, but at the end of the day, it's essentially radio in that when I'm calling a game, you don't see my face. I'm not acting in that regard. All you're hearing is my voice. So it is very, very similar to radio. And I'm very aware of it. It's funny. I can remember actually Gabriel Marcotti, who I've only met on a couple of occasions. We were in an elevator together at the World Cup final. And he said to me, I have a question. Because you commentators, are you like opera singers where if you have a little tickle or a twitch in your throat, like, do you take that day off? And I started to laugh. I said, no, that's actually opposite of the truth, which is that we learn how to play hurt all the time. And in fact, a great many of the games that I've called, and sometimes for a weird reason, the big games that I've called, I've been really struggling. And an example is last year, the Zlatan game, the LA Galaxy LAFC game, I had been sick all that week. Whenever I get sick, it attacks my throat. And I had a really sore throat, a hoarse voice. I was struggling through that game to get through it. And that was why actually you asked me to come on your show immediately afterwards. I was like, I can't. Like, I got to rest this thing up because I got a game next week. And I, a couple years ago, I got to a point in the 2015 playoffs. I can't even listen back to those because my voice was just shot. I'd done the Women's World Cup. I'd done the Gold Cup. And I had bad mechanics and it just wore down. And I did singing lessons in the spring of 2016 to learn and understand the mechanics of my voice better. Same as, you work on your running form or you work on your throwing form. I mean, this is my tool. This is my instrument. And I've had issues this spring. I got laryngitis and I was a mess for that LAFC Portland game in week two. I was actually back at the ENT last week getting a tube snaked down my nose into my throat, which is a super fun experience. You know, and some of it, I think now there's some seasonal allergy issues that are coming in. But yeah, I'm very, you know, Stu makes fun of me that I've made him addicted now to this particular tea that I drink a lot of. I've got Ricola cough drops all the time. I'm very, very mindful of stress and strain on my voice. Am I shouting? Am I in, you know, I try to avoid going to, you know, super loud places where I'm having to shout over that, you know, and be more aware. Cause it's at the end of the day, if my voice starts to deteriorate over time, that's sort of it. I mean, that's my tool. That's my instrument. And as I remind my wife, I have no other discernible skills with which to support us as a family. So I'm very aware of taking care of it, of using it the right way. And listen, the funny thing of it is, I think about God, like one of my very good friends in the broadcasting business, Brian Wheeler, who's the sensational radio announcer for the Portland Trailblazers. And he is solo, doesn't have an analyst for a lot of games anymore, doing 82 games a season now in the playoffs of, you know, 2.5 hours each, night over night over night. And he's going with energy and gusto and pitch and tone. I do 2 hours a week now. You know, we don't even have Champions League right now. I just have MLS. It's like, if I can't figure my voice out to be good for those, then what's going on here? So it is something that I'm very aware of and try to be, but also exactly that. How do I use my voice? How do I use pitch and tone? You know, think about the musical notes on the scale and really use it to sell the story of what we're trying to tell in these games, as opposed to, you know, just having more sort of a monotone thing. Can I use my voice to enhance the words that I'm saying?
Are you a good singer?
No, I'm not. My mom, actually, who sings in the church choir, interestingly enough, with a man by the name of Bill Shonley, who is the reason I'm a sports broadcaster. He was the radio voice of the Trailblazers for years and years and years that I grew up listening to. So I've gotten to know him through the choir, and she would like me to do it, but I don't think I'm that good. It's actually sort of a narrow band for singing. I can get more out of it for broadcasting for some reason, but you know, the times when I do the, you know, vela kind of that's singing mechanics that I've learned over time, where I'm doing it more as a note than I am just sort of shouting and straining through my vocal cords.
That's very cool. I want to ask you about Gold Cup this summer.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Fox is having a lot of soccer, that's being broadcast. Yes. Women's World Cup from France, men's Gold Cup from North America. You will be following.
Stay Cleveland in general. That's just sort of my stock one. You guys have fun in Paris. We'll be in Cleveland. Yeah.
But in terms of the Gold Cup and the history of the Gold Cup, one, I know you're kind of a Gold Cup geek. You're a U.S.
Yes.
soccer geek.
Very much.
These should be A squads at the Men's Gold Cup. There's definitely going to be more squads than ever before with 16. You're not too bummed out about missing Women's World Cup, are you? There's a lot to look forward to with the Gold Cup.
Well, that's, and I think the way I answered it before is, I'm incredibly disappointed to be missing the World Cup in France, but I would be just as incredibly disappointed to be missing the Gold Cup. It is the product of them being at the same time, as opposed to 4 years ago when they were back to back, or even 2 years ago, we did the Confederations Cup and the Gold Cup. Now my wife is thrilled because now I'm not gone for two consecutive months, which is nice. But yeah, it's sort of a no win. To not be getting to go to France, not be getting to call the World Cup would be an incredible experience. But I would hate to miss this Gold Cup in particular, beyond how much I love the uniqueness, the quirkiness, the history of the Gold Cup and what it is in these sort of hot American summers. This one in particular with the U.S., I would even say, because it's interesting you say that, you know, they should be full squads, and we've had these sort of things go back and forth. Is this the A squad Gold Cup? Is it the B squad Gold Cup? How does that relate to Confederations Cup? I don't think there's any holding back for anyone in this one right now, certainly for the U.S., but I would also sort of put out there the idea that for Mexico, I increasingly have a hunch that Tata Martino would love nothing more than to put one over on the U.S. and to win this thing for Mexico. And it did not, I don't know how much this got picked up, but I noticed this with very close interest just yesterday when Tata Martino in Atlanta to promote their friendly, I think with Venezuela, ahead of the Gold Cup, made the point that we were offered the opportunity for grass over the turf. I said, nope, we don't need it. We're happy to play on this turf. About a week after the statement by the Players Association of the men's national team about the game in Cincinnati. I'm not suggesting a value judgment one way or the other, just that I don't think stuff like that happens in a vacuum. So that sort of builds this concept for me that I think Tata is wanting to win this thing, which is I love, which is great. That's what it should be. This is going to be great. This is going to be fun. We yesterday had a big conference call going over our plans and ideas. We've got some ideas about, as we're in these cities for the Men's Gold Cup, can we do some events, some viewing parties for the women's team as they are playing their games at the World Cup. And at the end of the day, Aslan, I got Eric to my left, I got Stu to my right. Let's rock and roll on this thing.
I would also say, you mentioned Tata Martino. Didn't he have at least a couple of one or two moments where he sort of gently mocked U.S. soccer for not interviewing him?
I will say, without, again, it's sort of, you know, we exist sometimes, as you do as well, the world of things that are on and off the record and sort of relationships we enjoy because we're not necessarily saying everything. If you remember, in the playoffs last year, Atlanta at New York City, at the end of the first half, Tata came over to the wonderful, talented, amazing, and new mother, Katie Witham, and answered her halftime question in English. That type of stuff does not happen in a vacuum. So I'll just, you know, sometimes they're small and you have to be paying attention and you can knit together things, sometimes too much. I have a tendency to, for my own entertainment, connect dots that aren't meant to be connected. But I just, little things like that, you know, and he's a competitive dude. And listen, at the very least, Tata's trying to win over a sometimes, by which I mean always, skeptical public and media in Mexican soccer. I think the rivalry with the U.S. enters a new chapter, a new phase. But it doesn't mean, by the way, that there isn't immense respect between Greg Berhalter and Tata Martino. Right. And in fact, I saw a really cool moment between them at this Gold Cup event the other week where we revealed the schedule where they were talking and they have a, you know, it's a great relationship those two have of respect and these battles they've had in MLS. So that's the thing. I go back to, I forget what situation this was, but I remember reading this once about, you know, playing against your brother. You want to beat your brother more than you want to beat someone else that you hate. You might hate the other guy in this team, really dislike him. You want to beat your brother more because that sort of relationship increases the competitive juices. So I don't think anyone should overlook at all the significance of what this would be to have a U.S. versus Mexico final, among other reasons, because, listen, I don't think that you – The wound that was opened with the game in Trinidad, October of 2017, that wound does not heal this summer. It doesn't heal by beating Trinidad and Cleveland. It doesn't heal by winning the Gold Cup. I don't know what it takes, but it'll be more than that. However, trying to win back hearts and minds, trying to get people excited again, casual fans, even casual soccer fans, excited again about the men's national team. You do that by winning this Gold Cup, and really, honestly, you do it by beating Mexico in the final. A million things go into that. And there's a lot that you can't control. The fact that Jamaica and then the tournament before that, Panama, have prevented us from a U.S.-Mexico final the last 3 years, which, by the way, is a good thing. We do need to get to the point where the Gold Cup isn't just seen as, you know, let's just get to a U.S.-Mexico final, where there's three or four or five or six plausible winners. That's a sign that the Gold Cup is better. But the idea of what that sort of final would be in Chicago in July, particularly the fact that it could be a day-night doubleheader with the U.S. in the World Cup final. That could be a pretty fun day. That's the type of thing that excites me.
So you're traveling week to week,
yes,
doing MLS games from, you know, you're based in Portland, but you're all over the place week to week. What has stood out to you so far in your travels with MLS this season?
I loved Minneapolis, and I can give a much longer answer to this, but I have some fun ties, family and professional, into Minneapolis and the Minnesota Thunder and soccer at the old National Sports Center. Allianz Field is great. I mean, they $250 million is not what I would be spending on my house, but is not massive for a sports stadium. They spent that money well, and Dr. Bill McGuire, the owner of the team, as it was explained to us by a few people, a lot of that was up to him, his attention to detail, his insistence on getting every little thing right. That building is awesome. And the grass will be fine. Certainly by the time the U.S. is there, it'll be fine in a couple weeks. I felt sort of bad for the groundskeeper who's basically been living there, and he's sort of exasperated, like, it's new grass. It's the, you know, it's Minnesota. We had snow the other day. but that was a great place to visit. I'm excited to go back. We go to Kansas City, at least I do, for the first time this week. Fascinated to see what's going on with Sporting Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Fascinated to see what's going on with their opponent, Atlanta. LAFC are, and again, this is where it's dangerous with my sense of humor, because I make a joke about, like, these guys are ruining our games because they're blowing teams out, you know, and it's not always taken the right way to people that don't get my sarcasm. But, you know, they're playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers, which has been great to see. And boy, the idea of a, you know, what Galaxy and LAFC games will be like this year is pretty cool. It was fun to go to Cincinnati. It was neat to see that. I think they, you know, it's 3 years in. You're still building a broad-based supporters culture. You're still building a soccer fan culture. And that takes time, and that's still a process that's ongoing, but really cool to see. I think that's a lot of it. The investment in Minnesota, the investment in Cincinnati, the investment we've seen from LAFC, the investment in Kansas City with their facility they built last year, that's the type of stuff that you can feel the wheels turning, and the amounts of money and the seriousness with which it's being spent by people, and we talk about the new teams that are coming in. There's exciting stuff. And listen, we sort of cherry pick, right? We go to the places, we see the teams that are the most exciting. And you can look at our schedule and get a sense of who we are seeing on a regular basis and who we're not seeing on a regular basis. So we get the best of the league by design. So we're in a little bit of a bubble in that regard to every week. It's a sold out stadium and it's two top teams and that sort of a thing. But I greatly enjoyed this year and last have stood out that the first half of these seasons, there's an energy, there's a quality that exists to the early season, regular season games that in prior years wasn't quite there, where you could sort of tell certain teams were going through the motions a little bit just because they knew it's MLS, it's a long season, it's a forgiving format, we'll rattle off a few wins in the summer, we'll be fine, let's not go nuts here. And you're seeing slowly, but you're seeing the wheels turn a little bit on that, and that there is, again, you know, the reasons why I think is just that there's a better quality in the league. Yes, there's no relegation, you know, the playoff field expanded, but it's just, there's better teams, there's more people involved in the league who have a mentality of, we want to go out and win every single week. We don't care if it's April or May or September, and that's another area that this league needs, and that this league will succeed long-term with, is just quality every single day, and we're seeing it.
So here's a question for you, because I see LAFC right now and think they've kind of been the class of the league on the field so far this season, at least. And LAFC obviously was not in CONCACAF Champions League this season. MLS, what is it now, 11 straight years without winning CCL. Only one MLS team gets to the semifinals. It gets Kansas City gets destroyed by Monterrey. There's frustration there. Is the gap really that big, or do you think if LAFC was in CCL this year that they would have done better?
It's an interesting question, because I'm a big CCL guy. That's another tournament that I deeply miss getting to call from my years getting to call it with Fox. I'm a big believer in the importance of MLS winning that, of MLS having a team at the Club World Cup. I absolutely agree with, it's easy for us to gaze over at Europe, but the fact remains that the most watched soccer league in America by leaps and bounds is Liga MX. And that's where that battle for respectability is being fought and should be being fought much more earnestly than worrying about, you know, how MLS is perceived with regards to the Premier League or La Liga or things like that. Now, how do we get over the hump of that? Because on the one hand, you're right. It stretches out over time here. And to see Sporting Kansas City, of all the teams that you would not expect to drop 10 goals over two legs, it would be Sporting Kansas City.
Right.
In saying that, RSL should have won in 2011, and they had a million chances to score, and it was like the one time that they couldn't score at home. Toronto could easily have won in a penalty shootout last season. Montreal was leading in the second half a couple of years ago, right, in the second leg of the final. So this could easily be different. Sometimes the margins of success and failure in sports are a lot more narrow than we tend to remember, or at least, again, when they build up time over time over time. I do think one of the nice things in the reformatting, there was a time when it was a full year delay. So like the 2012 Supporters Shield Bash Brothers San Jose Earthquakes were not playing knockout stages of the Champions League until the spring of 2014, by which point they were sort of a battered shell of themselves. And yet, should have beaten Toluca in a penalty shootout, would have hosted the second legs of the semi and the final in the way it was formatted back then, and were getting guys back healthy. And I submit that that still could have been a really interesting to see where that would have gone with that San Jose team, but I digress. Yeah, it's weird, you know. And then Atlanta, as we've seen, it's an imperfect version of themselves right now that went through and was playing in the Champions League. What about this LAFC right now? What are they going to be like even next year, particularly in a league that, by design, it's difficult to build a dynasty? Right. You get picked apart by just the roster rules and regulations and the way things are set up, or even increasingly the fact that big teams and big leagues are going to be interested in buying your players when they have success in MLS. So it is a system that works for MLS, but that is maybe hamstringing a little bit for the ability of teams to compete against the structure and the design of Liga MX and how those teams have been built. And those teams are, you know, Monterrey is really, really, really good. So, yeah, I'm, and a lot of other people have made these points, but count me as one that is a big, big believer in really wanting to see an MLS team win, wanting to see MLS teams on par with Liga MX teams in this competition. I think it's been well documented ideas on how we get there, and certainly you can spend an hour easily with any number of coaches and GMs; they'll tell you the same thing. Hopefully we end up there. But how easily the story could have been different if not for a few inches one way or the other, certainly with Toronto and RSL.
I want to wrap up with something we talked about in our previously recorded podcast, which...
The rehearsal, the dress rehearsal.
Yes, exactly. I Googled your name recently to... I wanted to see...
I told you not to, Grant. I warned you, and you didn't listen.
I Googled your name because I wanted to see how young you actually were. And
you could have just asked, by the way, for sure.
There is someone else with the name John Strong.
Just say adult film star. That's the polite way of saying it, yeah.
Not just that, but an award-winning adult film actor.
He wins awards. I can't get nominated. It's the world's funny. It's tough.
How have you dealt with that one?
That's been a funny one of discovering that. And I'm trying to remember when that first came up, because I know there was something around when I switched my Twitter name to John Strong, because I think his like has two N's. He's Lithuanian, I believe, by birth, and has taken on this nom de guerre, such as it is, of John Strong. Which, yeah, I don't. Is that a compliment? I don't know. And so, yeah, but I think there's like two N's in his. And so for a while there was a lot of where we're crossing the streams here. And there have been issues with my wife, same thing, searching things on Twitter. And my brother-in-law, God bless him, same sort of thing as well, was very, very concerned when he discovered this. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I always say I had the name first. So, you know, he treaded on my yard. But I don't know. I think at the very least, you know, without being overly childish about it, our group, particularly with Stu and with Katie, we're very childish in some ways, and we have a lot of fun. And yeah, it has provided fodder for humor and things like that. It's tough because if I'm having this conversation with Stu and with Sean, with Eric, then I throw out the name Igor Rasputin. And they start laughing, but that's a reference that is so specific to our time in Russia and so obscure it sort of fails the rest of the audience. But that's my other challenge, if I can work in that idea. But at the very least, yeah, it's, you know what I mean. Listen, here I am, a young kid just trying to make his way in the world, trying to be a sports broadcaster. I've ended up in these weird situations that had these weird stories, and then there happens to be an adult film star with the same name. So listen, it's just add it to the list of sort of goofy, fun things that, if this all gets taken away from me, I'll have some fun memories to go back on.
Well, I still have this idea of for the dog days of summer for an MLS broadcast. And this, I have another idea for an SI swimsuit pictorial on MLS coaches in body paint that they just don't want to accept.
This is going in a really dark direction, Grant. But
that... You and John Strong, the other John Strong, they should have, like, do a gimmicky pregame thing.
I will say that you are more than welcome to bring that up with our bosses and executives, and let me know what the answer is. And you know, listen, we have attempted this year to push the envelope. We're trying to find different things, different ways to engage viewers with what's going on. We've had some what we thought were really good ideas that other people, unfortunately, I think, you know, said no to, that maybe didn't need to say no to that. But yeah, listen, I'm afraid to finish the rest of the sentence. So there you go.
you didn't think we'd get to MLS coaches and body paint, did you?
That I was not expect. Basically, when you started bringing up the other John Strong, now we're in dicey territory where I'm sort of like Michael Bradley, where I'm like, you can see the wheels turning as I'm like, what's the right way to phrase this? I like to choose my words very carefully. And I say that with deep love and admiration for Michael.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, so it's a good – sometimes that happens on our broadcast where I forget that it's not me hanging out with my friends, and I'll make a joke or I'll do something that afterwards on our review call, Shaw's like, you can't do that. Like, that's something that just loses the – you know, so easy to forget sometimes. It's not just you and I chatting on the phone. This is actually going to be listened to by people and exist in perpetuity on the internet. So
if we get the sound right.
If – exactly. Take three. We're really getting better at this. Yeah.
Well, John, you are a hero for coming on a second time when the first one didn't pass muster audio-wise. So thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. It's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Not the hero we need, but the one we deserve. Grant, thank you as always. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank John Strong, as well as producer Brandon Nix, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. See you next time.